Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 8th of November. It's all things political, and this hour we'll be talking about Wisconsin becoming a mostly red state. We'll talk about tax cuts, jobs, health care, money in elections, the future of Wisconsin Public Radio and television, high-speed rail. And the list goes on. We're happy to have with us Bill Kraus. Bill is a veteran political strategist and board member of Common Cause in Wisconsin. He's the former press secretary of Governor Lee Dreyfus in Wisconsin, and he is one very smart guy. He also writes on the website, Ed Garvey's website, fightingbob.com, and has some astute things to say about the election of 2010, which he said had gotten to the point where he almost didn't care who won. He just wanted it to be over. Our phone number this hour is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, and our email address, if you would like to use that, is talk@WPR.org. Hello, Bill. Thanks so much for being with us.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
Nice to talk to you.
Oh, great to have you here. So you almost didn't care who won. You just wanted it to be over, and you're a political junkie.
That's true, and I double that wish. I spent the few days leading up to the election and election day in New York. And there, the TV in New York made Wisconsin look like beanbag. It was just awful.
Well, there was a lot of money, and there was a lot of money we didn't know where it was coming from in this election, wasn't there?
Yeah, there was a lot. It was a horrifying amount of money. A lot of it came from people's own resources, which is identifiable. The PAC money is identifiable, but the strange money that came, the worst election in the whole country, I think, was the rejection election in Iowa, where three judges who'd been appointed and served their sort of a tryout time, they got dumped by outside money coming in, and the issue was gay marriage.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, that shows the danger of rejection elections. Number one, it could be very narrow issue. One issue, these people probably served 6 years. And they're going on one issue. And, of course, the other thing on rejection election is you better be careful about promises you can't keep, because you're going to be up for rejection in 2 or 4 years.
So tell me, let's start with the state of Wisconsin. Wisconsin became mostly a red state in this election. How did that happen, and what does that mean for this state, Bill?
Well, it was just a national wave.
Right.
Fundamentally, somebody once said recently that if everybody had been on the ballot and not gerrymandered into safe places, they all would have been thrown out. It was that kind of an attitude. It was a catch-22. If you were in office when things are not good, it's your fault. And if you try to fix it, we don't like your fixes. So there was no escape for incumbents, unless they were, you know, personally very popular or had other offsetting advantages to counter that wave, and a lot of them didn't. I had talked to the leaders of both parties before this election. They thought five state senate seats were in play. And the Republicans won all five, and about two more in addition that nobody even thought were in danger. So it was. I've never seen an election like this, where it was we hate you all, and we'll get rid of you all, and we don't care what you've done. And so that was that huge movement. And then the Democrats' problem is the 2008. Base turned out to be ephemeral. Mm-hmm. You can't count on college kids.
Right.
You can't count on blacks. The Hispanics did vote, apparently, in bigger numbers, but those surge votes that come in emotionally don't stick. So it was a disaster for the incumbents.
Right.
The desirable side effect is incumbents had gotten so invincible and so insular and so arrogant, they were getting impossible to deal with. They will now become a lot more friendly.
A lot more friendly, huh?
They're on the plank.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, we could use a little bit of friendliness. How about that? Are we going
Wouldn't that be fun?
That'd be okay. I think that people are going to be upset. Maybe I'm wrong about this, but I can't see too much happening here. I mean, obviously, it's different in Wisconsin, where you have control of the Assembly and the Senate and the governor. But nationally, it seems to me as though we're in a time of total gridlock for the next couple of years. Am I wrong?
I hope so. And I've always been a fan of split government. Then you have to talk.
Right.
You can't just sit there and say no, no, no to both sides. So it forces compromise, which is the heart and soul of politics, irrespective of the wishes of the yellow dogs, which want my way and no way and all the way. And it just doesn't work that way. And what I hope, of course, will that something will happen, or that the people will finally rise and say, look, boys, we want, and boys and girls, we want a government that works, and this one ain't working.
Mm-hmm. What do we do about jobs? That's obviously crucial in this election. So many people are unemployed, Bill, and it seems as though we have very different ideas from both parties as to how to move forward. Is it tax cuts? What do we do about deficits? What about stimulus, et cetera? My question to you is, how can Republicans and Democrats get people jobs?
I hate to tell you this, but the government has very little to do with creating private sector jobs. And that's where the jobs have got to come. They can create public sector jobs, you know, and have done. Much of the stimulus is fundamentally public sector, but that raises taxes or causes deficits, both of which have been rejected. The government, the state government particularly, has very little to do with job raising. They say, you could change the tax system somewhat. Less income, less property, more sales, and I think they probably will do that. You can make regulation. You can take away onerous regulations. Those are not crucial things. What has to happen for jobs to be created is private money has to come back in. The banks have to start lending money. People have to start buying things. And the government has nothing to do with any of that. The government is a sideshow, and I think that's going to be Scott Walker's big problem. He promised to create 300,000 jobs like Tommy did. Tommy wrote a boom. Tommy and Clinton were the two luckiest executives in history. They just sat there and watched the money roll in. And that ain't going to happen. Something has happened to this economy. We are no longer a wants economy, but much more a needs economy. And people are, as you say, they're scared, they're cautious, they're saving. And for the economy to reappear, it has to be driven by sales of things that people ain't buying anymore.
Yeah. So what about the public stimulus? The president did some of that. Teachers' jobs were saved in the state of Wisconsin.
Yep.
Is that a wise way to go? Not that it's going to happen now, but would that have helped?
The Democrats had a terrible time making the point.
Yeah, they did.
That you don't like the deficit, but think what, how would you have liked the Depression, which is what they presumably were preventing. And it was a story that wasn't particularly, didn't sell. People don't buy it. Now there's concern about the deficit as they are about jobs in some strange way. And the two, that disconnect, I don't know how they're going to get by that, because that you know, if you're going to cut spending to the extent that it is promised, you got to do things like empty the prisons, mm-hmm. or quit giving money to cities. Mm-hmm. The state is fundamentally a funnel for money to beneficiaries more than a spender of money. And so a lot of people are suddenly, as you say, the teachers go at risk. If the state shuts down the aid to education, you think your property taxes are high now, they'll be astronomical. So there's a lot of dealing to be done, but until you get over, I don't know what they're going to do.
I don't either.
And I don't think they know what they're going to
do.
And there's always this moment of truth when, okay, the campaign is over and I beat this person and I'm sitting at the desk, and then the stuff starts coming in.
Right.
All of a sudden, Obama looked up down at his desk and there was Afghanistan on his desk. That hadn't been on his desk in the campaign. And Scott Walker is going to find out there's 300,000 jobs promised. That's on his desk. Woo!
Yeah.
And he can't do much about it.
Yeah. Do you think we were on the brink of a depression when the president took over in 2008?
Well, we sure were in a lot of trouble, and we still are in a lot of trouble. And we've got the great recession. You know, it's sort of putting lipstick on a pig.
Oh, my gosh. Who said that?
Who said that? Well, that was Sarah Palin's line, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
I'd heard it before on Wall Street. But it was super serious, and it still is super serious. This economy has to be reinvented, and I don't think the bankers here don't know what to bet on. And I've been dealing with them as it happens on a project that would create some jobs, and they simply won't give you any money. They're scared.
Hmm.
Everybody's scared.
Well, what do you mean by that? The economy needs to be reinvented. How so?
Well, certainly our manufacturing economy is not a thing of the past, but it's certainly a diminished thing of the present. The competition, the worldwide competition from certainly the East, China, India, and those that cluster of countries, is ferocious. The only old country economy that was eminent and seems to be on its feet is Germany. And they took some tough measures, but they are, Britain is suffering, all of Europe, the rest of Europe is suffering. We're suffering. People buying stocks don't know what to buy.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a time of great uncertainty.
Mm-hmm. We're going to welcome phone calls for you. Let me get the number in. We'll take one right now, actually. We have a ton of people who are waiting to speak with you. It's All Things Political. Bill Krause is our guest this hour. My husband, who I listen to every now and then, Bill, said, you got to have him on. He's a really smart guy.
We hope to. We wish.
You know, and your former boss, Governor Dreyfus, a totally delightful man, was Michael did a lot of reporting on him, and I used to interview him as well. And he used to, I don't know, he must have said this to everybody, but talk about how to get a friend right away. He would say, you are two of my favorite young people. And we weren't young.
Right.
What a great thing to say. Very, very, yeah, good thing to say. Let's go to phone calls. Marty in Bennett is first. Hi, Marty.
Hi, good morning, Kathleen. You are my favorite talk show host.
Thank you, Marty.
Yes. Young talk show host.
Thank you.
I know we're not the only ones mourning the loss of Russ Feingold. Four fabulous Wisconsin women and I were out in Washington at the Colbert Stewart rally, and I was walking around with Feingold stickers plastered all over me, and I couldn't walk 20 feet without somebody stopping me. It didn't matter where we were, in restaurants, on the street, on the train. Oh, we're pulling for Russ. We really hope he wins. How's he doing? People all over the country were watching this race. And now here we have a senator who was elected by the Supreme Court, who had I don't know how people, I don't know what people were electing him for, because we really don't know what he wants to do. And I'm just terribly curious to hear what your guest has to say about the election of Ron Johnson.
And the money issue, too, which I want to ask you about, because Feingold didn't take that money. Was that significant? How did he lose, Bill?
Well, it wasn't money. He had plenty of money. I think that may have been a quintessential no-issue election. What Ron Johnson's election was on, I am not Russ Feingold. And then Russ Feingold sort of had to reinvent him when it became serious. And I think he got off to a slow start. All of a sudden, he had to reinvent himself, and he began to say, I am not this Russ Feingold. I'm the Russ Feingold you elected 18 years ago, and I haven't changed, and so on and so forth. But it was a totally personal election. Ron Johnson made vague promises about having been a businessman, knowing how to create jobs, which he's going to find out he can't do when he gets there. So he's once again, he's at risk in a rejection election move.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a phenomenon. He spent a lot of money. His ads were very good, very friendly, very personal. And it's like people said, okay, we'll give this guy a chance.
Mm-hmm.
Russ was there, and it went bad. Too bad, Russ. And his young people base did not show up. And that's always the problem with counting on emotionally driven people. If you don't have any emotional steam in the election, I say if the dorm is here, the voting place is there, and in between the dorm and the voting place is a tavern, you're dead.
Right. I think I don't know what I was watching. I watched too much television after these things. Michael Moore, I think, was saying if 5 million more young people had turned out, this election would have been different.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Marty, tell me about the rally. How was it?
It was huge.
It was huge, yeah.
If you weren't there the night before to get a space, we never saw anything, but we heard most of it. But I'll tell you, it was so amazing to be in one place at one time with 230,000 people. Everybody's on the same page. People would be quiet when you kind of wanted them to be quiet and would cheer. It was phenomenal, and it's the only reason why I'm not sleeping for 2 weeks following this election. I'm a little more buoyant than I expected to be.
Thank you, Marty, for your call. All Things Political, Bill Krause is our guest, veteran political strategist, board member of Common Cause in Wisconsin, former press secretary for Governor Lee Dreyfus here in Wisconsin, and he also writes frequently on fightingbob.com. And we'll take more phone calls momentarily. One line is open at 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the second hour of our program today, National Geographic's cover story, and they have this wonderful series that's on the National Geographic channel. I watched one of them last night. It's on mysteries of great migrations, what guides them into the unknown. And we also might add that many of these migrations are being threatened by climate change and also by human encroachment on the areas that they need in order to carry out their migrations. So we'll talk about that. I mean, we could spend a whole hour on the butterflies. It is amazing what the monarch butterflies do. So that's coming up, hour number two. Bill Krause is with us this hour. We go back to phone calls, and Chris from Milwaukee is next. Hi, Chris.
Hi. My son 2 years ago was angry at me because I didn't vote for Hillary. He said, Mom, Obama is no liberal. I said, I know he's not, but it doesn't matter what he is. It matters what he acts like. If he acts like a liberal, if he acts like FDR, he's going to have an army of people and all those new 2008 voters. He's going to have backing. He's going to win again. And if he acts like a moderate, he's going to lose. He had this election that he lost. Now he has to compromise even more. I don't see any way that he's going to win in 2 years.
Bill.
Well, of course, Roosevelt had the same kind of setback in 2 years and came roaring out of it. I wouldn't write Obama off. Mitch McConnell could reelect Obama by saying that my entire agenda is to beat Obama in 2008. He was elected to govern, not to beat Obama. That's a campaign issue. That if that attitude pervades, the Republicans will put themselves at risk and they'll be rejected. Because the mood is to deliver or get out. And okay, you're in now, and you suddenly are a lot more risk than you thought you'd be.
Frank Rich had an interesting. I like Frank. He always has interesting columns, but he mentioned the 1946 midterms in yesterday's column and says the unpopular and error-prone rookie president Harry Truman, buffeted by a different set of economic dislocations, watched his party lose both chambers of Congress, including 54 seats in the House, to Republicans that who move steadily right. But he fought this, and he goes on to say, Rich, that there was something in the American character that responded to a fighter, and he went on and won. What about this idea of a fighter? I don't know where that person's going to be, but it seems to me as though we need somebody we need a fighter.
Well, I've had all the fighting I need, I think. This is it's almost schoolyard. You are, I am not, am to politics. I want people who realize what their job is. Their job is not to win elections. Their job is to run the country. You know, the great Dreyfus line was when Clinton was elected, he said he wasn't my candidate, but he's my president, and I hope he succeeds. Because if he succeeds, I succeed. And that attitude seems to be entirely gone, and it isn't going to come all the way back. But it could fighting, slinging mud isn't going to make the country any better. Isn't going to create any jobs. Isn't going to do anything. It's a lot of stuff that has to be dealt with that is very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're spending all your time punching and counterpunching, you aren't paying attention to your work.
Yeah, maybe I'm not clear about this. By fighter, I would mean somebody who has decided that people being unemployed, that people who are hurting need a champion, and Wall Street doesn't.
I read a great book recently called 13 Bankers, and it talks about the unbelievable and unsustainable reliance we have on 13 bankers, and they've created the mythology without them we're dead, and it isn't true. And I think the Republicans are probably in a position to deal with that better than Obama, because they're not natural enemies. But Wall Street is part of the problem.
13 bankers, that would be a good talk show for us, huh, Bill?
It would.
All right. Thank you. Let's go to Tom, who's on the road. Hi, Tom.
Hi. Good morning, Kathleen. Good morning, Bill. First of all, Kathleen, I was looking for you at the open house yesterday. Sorry I didn't get to meet you. But anyhow, my question for your guest this morning has to do with, and it was a perfect lead-in talking about what you mentioned just a little while ago about asking where all the money is coming from. And my question is, how can somebody reverse? What's the procedure for reversing this recent Supreme Court ruling that enables corporations to essentially, you know, give as much money as they want to political candidates? And also, I know it'll never, never, ever happen, but just simply cutting down the influence that lobbyists have, you know, K Street in Washington, how does that, something like that, get minimized?
Well, I think that's a wonderful question, and on a few occasions I had an opportunity to ask questions in forums on the reforming the system. Everybody hates the system, but nobody that I ever talked to in this election was talking about fixing the system. And it isn't going to be easy because the Supreme Court has ruled now in three centuries. Number one, in the 19th century, corporations are people. Number two, in the 20th century, money is speech. And number three, in the our century, you can you don't have to expose the sources of money. All three of those are major contributors to the imbalance, the flow of money. And the flow of money is protected by the Supreme Court decisions. And until you get a new Supreme Court, you are not going to change those decisions. But what you can do is you can begin to reject money. and you, the voter can say, okay, I'm not voting for money anymore. You're not selling toothpaste here. You're selling ideas and you're selling yourself. And I'm going to quit voting for you. The poor boy candidates could start winning. And that turns off the money if it doesn't work. The reason money comes in is because it works. It worked in Iowa. David Brooks wrote a column about there's a saturation point when everybody has so much money that it doesn't make any difference anymore. But nobody that I know of ran on a poor boy campaign and won. And until you do that, the voter is the ultimate arbiter. The voter can vote against money. Vote against money, money ain't going to show up anymore. They're not, these people are not stupid. They're buying something and they're getting it.
You wrote in a recent piece, and this is astounding, Bill, political campaigns have evolved or devolved or deteriorated into 95% television and 5% organization.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it used to be, you know, when I started 60 years ago, it was exactly the reverse. Television didn't have any impact. But that's it. And the television ads play to an attack campaign. Because you only got 30 seconds. And you can't go through 500 pages of the health care reform bill, so you attack somebody for being a socialist, or you praise somebody for being a free marketer. And it gets very simplistic, and we let it happen. It happens on our watch.
Yeah. Thanks, Tom. Ken in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Question regarding Scott Walker, high-speed rail and jobs. Making a promise for 300,000 jobs, and like you said, Bill, he can't create them out of thin air. Yet I understand that the monies for high-speed rail, if we don't take them, they are allocated for high-speed rail for a state. And since we've been given these monies, and if we reject it, it will go to another state. I heard Andrew Cuomo, being governor-elect now of New York, is saying, send it on here.
You bet. If he doesn't get it, Florida will. Every state that has any rail ambitions will go for that money, and it'll be gone forever. You'll never get it back.
And won't the way that you see it, isn't this really ultimately a long-term money maker?
That's the question. It's a short-term job maker. You know, it's something like 5,000 jobs involved in creating this. And as it happens, the Dreyfus administration, our Secretary of Development at that time, talked about this prospect for helping Milwaukee and joining Milwaukee's working people to Madison's job-creating people. And so he thought of it as an economic development idea. But nobody knows. And what you do know is that, like rail everywhere, it'll probably have to be subsidized. But aren't automobiles and trucks subsidized? You're building their rails, in effect. So Tommy used to be a big advocate of rail. And those of us who've lived on the East Coast can see what rail will do for movement of people efficiently and quickly, and not expensively, but it's a little hard. It's a hard sell in the Midwest, where we're spread out and where car crazy and car conscious, and we have good roads, but and we don't know.
But it seems to me
this specific project will go away.
This project will go away, you think?
Well, if it's rejected, somebody
right.
else will take it.
Yeah. It seems to me as though the governor-elect is in a bit of a pickle on this just because of the way that it was handled. I don't know who decided, well, we're going to suspend this temporarily so that everybody could jump up and say, hey, you know, there are all these jobs, Gwen Moore's saying all the city jobs that are going to be lost, the company that's making this. Walker said, well, we campaigned on this, but he didn't say it as vociferously as he said during the campaign. So it kind of put him on the spot, I think.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, campaign talk can come back to haunt you, and that'll be the first example. And the second example will be tax cuts, which were part
yes.
of the promise, and tax cuts in the face of a huge deficit that has to be repaired. And then whatever ongoing functions of the government this administration thinks are important has to be funded.
Mm-hmm.
So he's in a bit of a quandary, particularly this one, because it does create so many immediate jobs.
Right. I heard Barrett on another Milwaukee radio station this morning, and he... with a bit of tongue-in-cheek, said, well, they'll take the money in Florida and call it the Wisconsin line. Let's talk a little bit more about these tax cuts. The Democrats don't seem, and the president doesn't seem to have a clear idea of what he's going to do here. Is he going to make an extension of the tax cuts, including for the very wealthy? His compromise here, there's huge question about how you tackle the deficit if you don't. If you let these continue, there's question in Wisconsin about this. What's the best course, Bill, do you think?
Well, using tax cuts as a job-creating incentive is an unproven idea. The people I talked a little bit about the new economy. The people making the new economy and their hundreds of them all over the state, Milwaukee, Madison, Fox River Valley, are starting little tiny companies. And most of them are going to fail. A lot of them are going to mog along, but a few of them are going to be the new economy, whatever that is. Those people do not give a rap about taxes. They aren't making any money. What they give a rap about is getting some capital into their business and making their ideas work. So tax cuts at any level are not an incentive for that group of people, which I think are going to define the future of Wisconsin and its economy. So to that extent, it's a phony issue. But it's promised, and it's out there. And Obama is going to have to give on something, and he may give on that. And I think if he does, and if it doesn't produce, then in a rejection world, the Republicans are going to pay the price of that.
Oh, the more we talk, the more it just seems like a mess, doesn't it?
It isn't easy. It never was easy.
Yeah.
It's getting harder. I'm so surprised at how little people know about where the money is going. Some very smart guy I was having dinner with Friday night was astonished to hear that the second highest budget item in the state of Wisconsin is prisons.
Is it really second yeah. highest?
And Medicaid's number one.
Hmm.
So, we're not in politics anymore. We're spectators to such an extent that we're losing touch. And, of course, we're losing our dominant newspapers, which used to be a gold mine of information.
Right.
You guys are the only statewide medium. We
right.
have no statewide medium in Wisconsin except public radio.
Yeah.
You're great, but that's a heavy load.
Yeah. What do you think of what we get a little worried, as you know. We're always worried about our future here at Public Radio. But I was struck, and I wonder what you think about this. Ed Garvey, you write for FightingBob.com, wrote recently, what do we have to look forward to? And he says this: how about capital punishment, a phase out of badger care, the end of Wisconsin Public Radio and public television?
As far as I know, those were never on anybody's agenda for the campaign. And they're, not to you, but it's just an inconsequential expense. If it were done, if they said, "Okay, you're on your own," it would be symbolic, not particularly rewarding. And the price you would pay for that, I think, like I said, you were it. You're the only statewide medium, and if I want to talk to everybody in the state, I got to get on your show.
Mm-hmm.
I can't. Otherwise, I got to walk. I got to go walk from station to station and city to city.
Right.
So, and I think the governor will realize that, and I assume will take advantage of. Remember, Dreyfus used to have a Saturday morning show.
Yes, he did.
All in show.
Right, and the master of conversation. He was really the master, wasn't he?
But he knew how important it was.
Right.
His point of view was never underestimate the people's intelligence or overestimate their information. So we kept pumping out information like, as Michael knows, it was like a fire hose.
Well, maybe we should offer that. That would be a good thing. That would help us, too.
I think so.
You got an idea here.
People relying on the Internet are relying on a false god. The Internet is a wonderful medium, but you got to go to it.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to. It isn't a pusher. It isn't a pusher's medium. It's a user's medium. And you guys are a pusher's medium. Print is a pusher's medium. And information has got to be pushed out there.
Thanks, Ken, for your call. Scott on the road. Hi, Scott.
Hey, good morning.
Hi.
Hey, thanks so much for taking the call. I'm driving through the state. I was surfing the channels, and I came across your program, and it's extremely interesting. My question to your guest was, you made a reference toward Germany's economy as if it is one that is not suffering the way that the rest of the economies of the world are, and he alluded to some painful steps that they had taken. And I was curious if you could elaborate on that, and is it something we could learn from?
Did you hear all that? I'm not sure I got all that.
And I'm not going to be very conversant on this. I know what they went to a lot of four-day weeks rather than laying people off.
Oh, okay.
And cutting them off of their benefits that are tied to their job. They opted to go to four-day weeks instead. They got a lot more. They did a lot of trimming of their government. They didn't cut their government massively, but they got the people to buy into it and say, okay, this isn't France. On the other hand, has exactly the opposite reaction. They're going to riot and shut everything down. But the Germans are more malleable, I guess. And they bought into it, and they kept everybody, as many people as they could, working, and started to rebuild. And they're producing products that people want. So, and I think we are better. I think our automobile business, for example, is much better. And maybe we've got to contract the working time without contracting the working force. I think that was the central idea that they sold.
Thanks so much, Scott, for the call. Let's go to an email here, Bernie in Elkhorn, who says he likes you, Bill, but what he is saying doesn't jibe with the reelection by wide margin of Republican congressmen like Paul Ryan. Evidently, there was no oust the incumbents when they are Republicans.
Well, the Republicans didn't win everywhere, and of course they had bad, tough primaries. The Republicans felt the sting more in primaries than in the general, because the Democrats have been in control, and that, of course, that's going to be Walker's big problem. I think is he's going to control everything. He's got both houses and the governorship, and if he doesn't do, and he has no excuses. That was always such a great thing for Dreyfus. You know, if he, there was something he didn't want to do that his base insisted on, he'd say, "Oh, I'd love to do it, but the Democrats in the Senate
right.
will never let me."
Right. Yeah.
So he's out of excuses, and that and in what we all find when we go out of a campaign into governing, our friends are our worst enemies.
Right.
Because they want everything, and we can't deliver.
Bill Krause is our guest for All Things Political. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. He was referencing his old boss, a wonderful guy, former Governor Lee Dreyfus, and he was press secretary for him. He's a veteran political strategist, board member of Common Cause in Wisconsin, and is a frequent blogger for FightingBob.com. More phone calls in a moment. 800-486-8655 is the number, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the second hour of our program today, National Geographic's cover story this month is on the Great Migrations, and they are also is a really good. I watched the whole thing last night. It is, you know, sometimes hard to watch because of the way of nature. Animals eat animals and kill animals in large numbers on their great migrations. But the whole idea of a great migration and that all of these animals, they do beautiful, beautiful scenery and images of, must have been hard to get. They followed the monarch butterflies from Mexico all the way to Canada, and the number of generations that are involved in that journey. And also they looked at whales and red crabs on Easter Island and all kinds of animals who are involved in a great migration. What guides them into the unknown? It'll be a good hour. Bill Krause is with us this hour. We go to Rich from Rhinelander next. Hi, Rich.
Good morning. Thank you. Bill, I thought I heard you say earlier on this program that you thought Wall Street was a big part of the problem.
I did.
Okay. Here's the deal. At last, a contemporary Republican I can vote for. I'm going to say a draft Krause for Commander-in-Chief in 2012, because I'll tell you, Kathleen had a guest last week that didn't show up, and I called in and said, I don't care if the Democratic Party is in trouble. I don't care if the Republican Party either is or is getting into trouble. I care that our country is in deep, deep trouble. And, you know, our founders, George Washington, said that parties are artificial and extraordinary forces that distort the will of a nation. And I don't know where to go or what to do or who to write checks for. I know you're going to say Common Cause, Bill. and you're right. Okay. But it's gloomy. It really is. It's gloomy for the Republicans because they're a faction. It's gloomy for the Democrats because they're a faction, and it's gloomy for our country because we're being led to believe that our country is about factions and about, not about the common cause of the nation. And I really, really do think that we've screwed things up royally, Bill, and I think you should run for president because you're a straight talker.
It's a little late. we had a meeting in Madison, a reunion of the people who formed the original Department of Development, and the classic optimist was a member of that group, and she said, "Here we're almost at a perfect place. Things are almost so bad that they've got to get better. So we got to get a little worse." And maybe we did. Maybe November 2nd was a little worse, and maybe there'll be a recognition. And and we're going to get some samples of whether there is a reaction. I think the gerrymandering opportunity is going to be in the hands of the Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
Are they going to do it, or are they going to say, "These people are not, we're picking their candidates, they aren't."
Mm.
And whether they would respond to a redistricting reform to get more competition into the races. You know, there were, I said there were one time there were five races they thought were in play, and there are actually seven turnovers, but that's out of 12 races. So the previous legislature, 10 years ago, the fix was in for in one way. Now the fix can go in another way. Or they can say, oh, no, in fact, actually, we should get as much competition as possible. What are the chances? Not high, but if the people say, we don't like this anymore, we don't like being treated like buyers of light beer, we don't like being put in places where we really have no choice, and we want some serious changes, that would be a place to put some money and to put some energy. Let's do what we can do. We can get more disclosure of where the money is coming from, and we can actively push for objective redistricting. That's a start.
I like what Rich said. You know, and this should guide us, that the country is in trouble. There are a lot of people who are in trouble. You see news reports, I think it was in West Dallas in the last couple of days, there were 700 job openings and 4,000 people showed up for the jobs. And you've got a feel for those people. We are, you know, there but for the grace of God go I. That's and we have got to address that together. We have to look at it together.
Yep. And anything that we don't do that doesn't rebuild or reinvent this economy is a waste of time.
Yeah. Well, we're right, aren't we, Bill?
We are.
Yeah. Reed from Clintonville is next. Hi, Reed.
Good morning. Say, here's a comment. Recently, our congressperson, Dr. Steve Kagan, in the 8th Congressional District, was ousted by Congressman-elect Reed Ribble. He and I share the same name with the same spelling, which is interesting. However, Dr. Kagan was gracious enough to refuse to take health insurance as provided to congresspersons or other elected officials through the U.S. government and for himself and his family. And I have already written to Congressman-elect Reed Ribble concerning this issue. I feel that it would be important as a step of solidarity with all of us out here that are suffering enormously with health concerns and health insurance concerns, that is. I, for one, am very fortunate. I have Medicare. I've reached that age where Medicare is beneficial to me. However, my my supplementary policy is exorbitant, and there's nothing I can do about it, and it's been raised arbitrarily for no reason whatsoever after I've contacted the company. They just said, well, it's something we do for everybody. My wife pays $700 a month to be insured.
Wow.
Our youngest son is about to be unemployed and needs health insurance, will need health insurance after his unemployment or after his employment is terminated. These kinds of things. And yet these people run on the promotion of smaller government and saving you money, and then they go and they take all these wonderful benefits unto themselves. And they're two-faced about this.
All right, let's get a response. Bill.
Well, you know, the health care situation is very complicated. I'm a veteran of the insurance business, and I'll get a lot of kickback from this, but I don't think the insurance companies should be players in the game. All they do is shuffle the money. I think you've got to restructure the way benefits are paid, and you have to get at the high cost of our healthcare system. So the individual case of Kagan, actually Kagan never should have won. The way OB and Sensenbrenner redistricted, that was supposed to be a Republican district. So he got lucky for a couple terms. It's a very nice gesture, but he's rich. And
he can afford to buy health insurance.
The only millionaires in the Congress are getting them. And I just don't have somebody up there who, in Congress who needs health care.
Mm. Thanks so much for the call, Reed. Oh, Bill, I hate to say goodbye to you. I just want to keep talking. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, we'll invite you again, that's for sure. Bill Krause, our guest this hour for All Things Political. He was press secretary for former Wisconsin Governor Lee Dreyfus. He is a veteran political strategist and board member of Common Cause in Wisconsin. And you can he blogs frequently on fightingbob.com, Ed Garvey's blog, so you can read Bill frequently on that. Thanks to Chrissy Peace for doing on-air production, to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour. And thanks, everybody, for all of your calls. We were just flooded with calls, which is, it's good. It's always good to have people involved in the political process. I like it. And we'll return in a moment and have another fascinating hour. Don't go away.